Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's your boy, Rico No Suave. Welcome back. Hey, everybody. I hope you guys are ready for a great show here on Wednesday with none other than Soyo, tu sabes, Rico No Suave. Hey, it's a beautiful day here in Chicago, everybody. And you know why it's a beautiful day? Because the sun is shining and there's no angry people outside. You know, that's what I really love about being on this show is that we keep it hot in here. We keep it smiling. But I know those people outside, when it's raining, they don't look too well. That's what I say. Everybody, welcome. We got a fun, filled-packed show for you guys. Don't forget, everybody, make sure you subscribe, share this video right now, tell everybody and their grandma, hey, Rico No Suave is actually on, so make sure you tune in. All right, this month, everybody, of course, last month, we actually had something that we always talk about, which was autism, but now the month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Yes, Mental Health Awareness Month. And yes, you know, one thing about mental health awareness, let's put the big picture on for me. Cause I want everybody and their grandmama to see this one. Cause you know, this is the month of May, Mental Health Awareness Month, everybody. And you know, what I talk about mental health awareness is not just for adults. We also talk about the kids. Cause sometimes with the kids itself, you know, we need them. We need to make sure that their mindset is actually there for the world. So I want you guys to make sure, we're going to keep this up as far as a logo, but I want any organization, if you're actually going through depression, for any other kids, that you start seeing some changes. Parents, stay in your kids' lives, right? Guardians, stay in your kids' lives as well too. Influence them to be able to be great at whatever that they love to actually do. This is a key for our kids. So we're going to be talking about Mental Health Awareness Month all month long. And hopefully I'll be able to have some organizations that I can be able to talk to you guys about in order for you to be able to find help. Or you might know someone that needs help as well too. All right, everybody. Now, continuing on. Of course, bringing some mental health awareness may bring sadness to me, but this gentleman here has hit the stage for many, many years. It's Jerry Springer, everybody. I want everybody to clap because it's Jerry Springer. And one thing that I want you guys to understand about Jerry Springer is it was kind of an idol of, wow, how could you bring just normal people on stage and there's people that's actually just saying, Jerry, Jerry. And then you have what we call fights. But before we get to the next slide, did you know that he was the mayor of Cincinnati for 2 years? I think it was in the 70s. I didn't know that he was a former mayor in Cincinnati. And it was crazy because when you think about Jerry, you think about, of course, the Jerry Springer Show. And it's interesting. It's very interesting to be able to hear that. But of course, you know, he took into broadcasting and he started doing broadcasting for over 27 years. And I was really happy about that. Let's go to this next slide, because you already know when Jerry Springer came on, everybody, you can see him in the background while the security guards are trying to break up a fight of two ladies. And everybody was like, man, you know what, Jerry Springer Show, you know, it's all script. You know, somebody's going to be throwing some chairs. You know, something was going to actually happen on a Jerry Springer Show where either somebody was sleeping with somebody else's grandma or grandpa or whatever. And you're like, oh, my God. This is crazy. But that was the thing about Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer knew how to gather the audience up, and he took it away and just say, you know what? People are going to remember me, not just because of broadcasting and being on podcasts or being on the radio, but also on TV when there was just plenty of fights. So when you hear Jerry Springer, you know there's going to be somebody going to be fighting over somebody's boyfriend or girlfriend. All right, here's the last slide. I want to say thank you to Jerry Springer. He passed away at 79. Jerry Springer, and they just revealed the cause of death. It was pancreatic cancer that he actually had. And I have to say that Jerry Springer was an icon to many of us in the broadcasting field. But also we knew Jerry Springer as one of those guys that was really hyper, that was really up to par. And I really loved watching some of Jerry Springer when he actually did come on. Of course, after a while, you're like, man, what else is there about Jerry Springer? And Jerry Springer had plenty of other good friends like Steve Wilkos. Now you won't know that he actually has his own show as well too. And Maury was actually a good friend of his, is You Are the Father, or You Are Not the Father. So those were also great you know, friends of his as well, too. And everybody was loved by Jerry Springer. So everybody, you know, as Jerry Springer is in heaven, thank you so much, Jerry Springer, for everything that you have done.
Yes, yes.
Now it's time for me to introduce this beautiful young lady that's with me because, hey, behind the scenes, she's just so cool. She's just so cool. That's all I got to say. She's just so cool. Because there is always, I call it a diamond and a rough, because she is a diamond and a rough. And I'm so happy because she is an author. She is an evangelist. And she has given herself a positivity to others and also telling other people about her path that inspires others that, yes, you can do it. Instead, it can be done. Today, everybody, we will be talking about her book. We will be talking about her book here. Who said it couldn't be done? That's right. I want you guys to stand up. I want you to put your jacket on or whatever you actually want to do. Let me get the book right. Put your hands together for none other than Denise Jones. Let's go. What's up, Denise?
All right. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Been waiting on this moment, you know.
I've been waiting, too. There's a lot of great things that I have to say that you have done over time that actually brought you from the darkness into light. The thing that really by listening, and I'm sorry, I've heard some of stuff that you have actually on Facebook, but also I've read your bio. I read things about you and I was touched about it. Right. And I think that's one of the reasons why, and I know that's one of the reasons why we have you on the show today. Right. So welcome to the show. Before we get started, do you have any shout outs to anybody out there?
Listen, just to the massive, right? I always keep it to the massive because yes. I always say it's not about me. It's about you and you and you.
Yes.
That's what it's about.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. Yes. All right. Well, let's get into it. Everybody, I want you guys to make sure you ask questions. Please make sure you participate as far as with us because we are ready. Thank you, John T, for free. Thanks so much. All right. This is going to be deep, but I want everybody to understand as far as your path. When you were going through the phase of molestation at age 5 and beyond, how did this affect you growing up in school?
It affected me because when it first happened, and to know that with your cousin, you know, it was my uncle first, right?
Okay.
That brought me into a closet. And, you know, he was the babysitter, so playing house and hide and go see and things of that nature. So as a child, you're not expecting those particular things to happen to you, right?
Yeah.
So he had me in this big walk-in closet where we were behind clothes and he started to bump and grind on me, right? And then it went from my uncle to my grandfather, sitting me on his lap, putting his hand all on my private parts, sticking his tongue in my mouth.
Ew,
right? And so how do you really articulate that?
Right.
You don't. You know, you don't know how to go. And at the time, my grandmother was keeping me. So how do I go to her and say, Mama, Uncle Dennis did this. Granddaddy did this. How do you really go and tell somebody about that? So when came age time to go to school, as I now look back, I understand that I was affected because I was withdrawn. I was withdrawn. I always wanted to sit in the back of the classroom. I always wanted to stay to myself. So, and I know part of that was because of what happened to me. And I recall one moment when I was in the fourth grade, right? And the teacher asked, what was the four seasons? I knew what the four seasons were, but I was too embarrassed to say it because I was withdrawn, right?
Yeah.
He brought me in front of the classroom, made me hold my hand out. And because I wouldn't say it, he beat me with a ruler in my hand. So that just pushed me farther away.
Wow. So because back then, and you know, as far as the age between 5 and 8, I mean, kids really don't know any better but to be able to be to themselves. Because growing up, people might think, oh, this person is just shy. But they really don't know what's really going on in the back end. When your teachers, because was it a routine thing in regards to you holding things to yourself? How long did that last? And also, did the teachers even realize why you were actually holding things to yourself?
And that's the part that's really sad, right? Even when, first when it starts at home, that no one at home even recognized that there's a problem,
wow,
right?
Yes.
So that's, it starts there first before you can even get to a classroom, right? And so, and you being, you know, you going around family members, nobody know why Denise wants to stay to herself or didn't want to be involved in anyone. Now you get in school and you have the same thing going on. So of course, back then, counselors were not the way they are today. So
sure.
Some things were not being recognized as they state, oh, she's just one of those children that want to stay to herself.
Right.
So, listen, I was never able to talk about this stuff really until I started to write this book.
Wow.
So I went through all my adolescence and growing into my early teens and coming on up, holding that thing that happened to me.
You know, I think one of the things about going through something like that as a kid is the traumatization of the scar that you have, and how does the scar ever heal? That scar or something like that that you have, as far as even like for me, like having to argue with my parents is a scar for me, because I never would love to have an argument
Absolutely.
With my parents, right? Because of the love and the passion that you have, but also the things that was actually happening for you during that time, you really didn't have an outlet for anyone to know exactly what was going on, or they just didn't believe you. Unless it was to that point where you tried to say something and it was overlooked. How was that when you
tried? I don't even think I tried to bring it up, because as a child, how do you articulate something like that?
Yeah.
And then on top of it, with my grandfather particularly, you know, stating this is our secret.
Mm.
And, you know, you're getting the little nickels and dimes back then. So
sure.
you don't, you know, this is daddy and my secret. So you keep that to yourself.
Right.
You know that it was not, you know, when you look back, you can say now I know that it was not normal, but the feeling of it.
Right.
The feeling of having him every time he was bouncing me on his legs, you know, or putting his hand on my private part or sticking his tongue in my mouth mm-hmm. and trying to kiss me, always brought an eerie feeling.
Yeah.
But again, this is our secret,
right?
You don't tell nobody. So you grow up with that on the inside.
So I think, you know, when you hear about something like that, or even if you heard it for nowadays, like if you would have told me, hey, this is something that's actually happening, it's almost like as a man, you want to go and say, put him in jail.
Or Absolutely.
I want to actually do something harmful to what you're doing to a kid. I think one of the things about what you actually went through during that time is sad. I mean, and I think when you were in school, how was your mindset with doing like homework? Because that has to be like, you can't focus on your schoolwork knowing that you have to come home to deal with something like that. Or, I'm sorry, the little secret that you had that was between that. How did your schoolwork get affected by that as well?
I can say the damage of that, because even when I look back now of not doing homework, right? Or avoiding doing homework,
right?
Because I was just had became so introverted, right?
Yeah.
So you make the attempts to do the things that, you know, you're supposed to learn and do, but just actually just really doing it, no.
Mm.
The reason why I brought that up, because that's kind of a sign to tell people, hey, why is she not doing this homework? Why is she not actually being the way she's supposed to be in school? We're getting A's and B's and she's failing at this. What is wrong? What is going on here? So that's the reason why I
brought
that
up. And not only as I look back and I look into some of my school records, I was always labeled, you know, you had that label on you of being, having now today mentally challenged and things of those natures, right?
Okay.
So always having D's and C's.
Yeah.
There was never no A's and B's. So, and when you read a report card to say things like that, right, it just puts you further away.
Yeah, yeah. And Yeah, I when I think of stuff like this, like if I was to bring home C's and D's, my parents would probably think that what's going on in your life? What are you doing? Right? Because digging deep, or even you would think that the schooling system mm-hmm. would think that, hey, why is she failing? Or why is he failing? Why is this actually happening? To be able to say, this is why this is happening. But as a kid, you would know right. that, right?
Because but you know, some of the, but the strange part to this story is by the time I got in the fourth grade, that was when I moved in with my mother, right? Okay. And so things started to happen so fast.
Yeah.
So a lot of things were being missed in between there, right? Yeah. You start off going to school, you're doing what you're doing, but at the same time, things in your household changed.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's the, I mean, the hard parts of just even thinking about, you know, the first part of it. And of course, we're kind of going to switch gears to being in the house, because then you got 15 years more of like situations that's actually happening as far as with you being introduced to something else, which is even more traumatization of when is it ever going to stop? So when you actually went through that, let's say you moved in with your mom. Talk to us about when you moved in with your mom and what that situation was.
So moved in with her. Everything was like peaches, cream, you know, had the best household, full of furniture, all the food, everything that you can just think of that you want to have as a child.
Yeah.
And living in Rockwell Gardens, so they had like community programs for the children there, right?
Yeah.
So we went to North Dakota for 2 weeks. Gone 2 weeks now. You mind you, you got this beautiful house,
sure.
Everything in it. Oh, I got my mom and she's looking like my mother. And you go away for 2 weeks and come back and she's no longer my mother and she's looking like you.
Wow.
In a 2 weeks time.
Wow.
So the whole household just shifted immediately.
Wow. So what was that household looking like? When you came back, it's like a surprise of what just happened, like the world just turned. What was that situation like when you got back home?
When she picked us up at the Union Station, right? Mm-hmm. We looking to see our mother. She walks up, she dressed up like a guy. She has this two-tone color natural, right? Yeah. And then she had these strange people with her. So I'm asking my brother, who are these people? You know, where they come from, what's going on? And so he always told me I was nosy because I asked a lot of questions, sure. Right? When you're seeing things constantly on the change.
Right.
So by the time we made it back to our apartment, now we have to share rooms,
yeah.
Right? Because you done took our room and you done gave our room to your friends.
Mm.
And now you're starting to have all these parties in the house, right? So that whole family lifestyle, that dynamic changed.
Wow.
Instantly, it went away. So all the things that we recognized as a mother now was turning into like trauma, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're being traumatized by the things that you're seeing in the house, all the parties, people looking any type of way. You know, we're not used to this as a child. This
right.
was something we wasn't used to. So automatically you start to wonder now what's happening? What's going on? Why is this happening? And you couldn't even ask questions. I'm a child. How can I ask these questions?
Sure.
All I can do is go in your room. Don't come in here.
Yep.
Stay in here.
Yep.
Get up. Go to school. And it had got to the point that I started in that fourth grade, the fourth and the fifth grade, I started hiding out in the laundry rooms to keep from going to school.
Wow.
Right? I would watch the truant officer come to the building. Back then, they had truant officers, right?
Okay.
So I would watch the truant officers come to the building and I see them coming in, going up, knocking on the door, but my mother would be drunk or she wouldn't be there. So all that piece got missed. I still wonder today, how did that even get past it enough where social service or somebody didn't get involved in it?
Yeah, and that was kind of my next thing I was going to ask about, because normally when kids either miss school for quite some time, you start talking DCFS. You know, because they've been around for a long time,
yeah.
Right? So you would think that the school, once again, the school would say, hey, you know, Denise hasn't been here in school. What's going on? somebody should be concerned in regards to this. The transformation in regards to with your mom, how long did that last in regards to what's at the time? Let me ask you this question. Let me step back. When you came back, the transformation in regards to how long you need to be in your room and how long this actually was, how many years until it took for you to understand, I don't know what to do.
Well, I don't even know if I thought about, in a sense like that, I don't know what to do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because when she started running in the streets and leaving me to be the care, right? I'm the mother. I'm becoming a mother now at an early age, right?
Yeah.
Taking on the responsibilities of an adult. And when we wasn't having food, I would call my grandmother or start to steal out the store or sending my other siblings, knocking on neighbors' doors. Can you give us some bread?
Right.
Do you have some butter? Do you have some sugar? Just so we can make butter sandwich, sugar sandwiches, however. And it got to a point that it had gotten so bad, right?
Yes.
To my mother told me I better never call my grandmother again to talk about the things that was happening within our household, right? If we didn't have no food, oh well.
Wow.
You know, so it had gotten that bad. And at this point, now my mother is now in the lesbian lifestyle, right?
Okay.
Full-fledged, right?
Okay.
And so she started to bring up women here and turning them out and started to having them prostitute. So as we continued on, right, then she started to teach me the game.
Wow.
So she started teaching me out, hustling with her.
Okay.
Before I got turned out, she started having my brother now. We would go out. We would pop hubcaps, you know, and we'd do those kinds of things for her to make drug money. She would go and buy one can of Chili Man chili that's been around for ages, right?
Yeah.
And come home and pour that in a pot and then fill it up with water. And all of us would eat off of a can of chili beans and some Ritz crackers.
Wow. So during that time where this is amazing, I mean, I'm like, wow. Like, okay, so if your mom was doing so, and I'm not saying for anybody that's out there and you're listening to this, of course, this is nothing that we condone on the show, but this is strictly in regards to how is it that if she was doing like prostitution and there was money coming in, how you guys were eating chili beans and there had to been money actually coming in for that, or was it specifically just for the drugs?
So as you heard me state, before she got involved in drugs, right, we had a lifestyle. We had
what you would think
as a normal lifestyle of having food, clothing, all the things that's needed, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when she got involved in the drugs and became addicted.
Okay.
So you got to think about it. When you're an addict, right?
Yep.
Your children goes out the window,
yes.
and you not knowing, the thought of an addict is not to think that I'm abandoning my children,
sure.
You know, I'm letting them go hungry. Well, I bought this can of chili in. I gave you some chili. I gave you some crackers. You know, in your mind, you're thinking I'm feeding them.
Yep.
So you got that small portion of money to do that, and then the other portion of the money is going strictly on drugs.
I see.
And so, we went through that for a long time.
Wow. How many years would you say that?
Whew. I want to say a good 20 years.
Wow.
A good 20 years. And so, and by that time, by her teaching me the game, right, now I done got turned out into the lesbian lifestyle, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm watching everything that she was doing. She was teaching me games. So she was teaching me how to make money, how to survive, even though it was wrong.
Right.
And so with me making money and things of that nature, now I'm able to kind of help with my siblings, ensuring that they're eating, ensuring that they're going to school, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, boom, Denise get addicted to drugs now.
Wow.
So now they left the fend for themselves, right?
Right.
Now they're stealing out the stores. They're going and asking neighbors for food. So this thing, I mean, it was like a generational thing.
Wow. You know, I'm like super heartbroken to hear stuff like that because, you know, we talk about a lot of things in regards to everything starts at home, just like we just talked about, right? Everything starts from home. And then you tend to follow that path because that's all you know.
Absolutely.
Right? during that time, were you still in school?
Nope.
Right? Wow. Wow. How old were you? What was the age range that you were in when you were actually addicted, and then when you finally realized, like, wow, this is not going to do me anymore?
It started when I was in the fourth grade, but you know how you'll go to school, you'll drop out. I'm not drop out. You'll go to school, sure. You won't go. So that thing went on until I got probably like in the sixth grade, right? Just running in, running out, sure. Running in and not staying. So by the time I really got in the sixth grade, I was completely out.
Wow.
You know, one, I had a stigma because I was tall. I was tall and skinny,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So I'm taller than the other children. I'm looking like I'm too tall to be in the particular grade that I was in.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
The children was laughing, fast. Making fun.
Sure, sure.
I didn't have the clothes. I no longer had the clothes to look like the other children. So those were some of the things that really drove me not to go back to school.
Wow. High school, did you at least?
I went to Farragut High School one day.
Wow.
Literally one day.
So pretty much your lifestyle was pretty much in the street and whatever you had at home, and that was it.
That's it.
Wow. Wow. Man, these comments, man. I think, yeah, I'm gonna let them comment. I'm gonna let them comment because I still, within myself, you know, it's such a horrible thing to actually go through, because on the outside looking in, it's like it's horrible. But then I'm not in the inside to really say, hey, this is what's really going on, because I'm not living that lifestyle.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people that actually, as you were growing up, because you were doing crimes, did your mom or you ever go to jail?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. And you know, in me telling this story, I make no apology about the things that I went through, right?
Sure.
I am truly grateful that God took me through, allowed me to go through those things, that I can be where I am today, because
yeah.
how many other individuals are in the same shape, right?
Right.
Even right now today.
Yep.
So, and having a mother who was a drug addict and the influence of her and the environment introduced me into doing drugs. Even before I started to shoot drugs, I had the question, why were you always behind this door, right? Why are you behind the door?
Yeah.
What's going on in this room? Why is it that you constantly taking us with you on 16th and Holman, right?
Mm.
Ogden and Kizzy. We go here. We have to sit in the car for hours. We go there in the daytime sometime, and it'll be nighttime when she comes out, right?
Yeah.
And so not knowing what was actually going on. And this very day, she came home one day. She says, listen, you always ask me what's going on in this room. She says, come on in, have a seat. She said, I want you to see what I'm doing so that you don't be like me.
Mm.
So as we look at things, right?
Yep.
You my role model.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you said, don't do as I do, but do what I say do. No, when you showed me that, it was saying, do what I do,
mm-hmm.
right? Because mm-hmm. it was the wrong thing that you showed me.
Right.
And so with her doing what she was doing, and I wanted my mother, and thinking about it, the only way I can have her is to do the same things that she was doing.
Wow. I'm like, you know, this right here, right now is powerful. And there's always, of course, there's a light, you know, at the end of the tunnel. And I'm clapping because you survived that, right? We're going to take a quick break.
Absolutely.
Right? We're going to take a quick break. Everybody, we have Denise Jones, evangelist and author. I'm hoping you guys are enjoying yourself. We'll be back in 30 seconds, everybody. Let's get it. Yeah. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We got my girl, Denise Jones, evangelist and author. Man, this is deep. I'm loving it. I'm loving it because there's always that problem and there's a solution.
All the time.
There's that solution. I want to talk about, because we know exactly what you've been through. And of course, John T. for Free says, wow, that's so deep. What a lesson to learn about raising kids. The role model piece that you knew what not to do, even though you did it.
Absolutely.
You had to abide by what we call the rules under the house, but also it was kind of a way of you not knowing. You took that leap and you say, well, so my mom is doing it. I guess I have to do it too, right?
Well, it wasn't so much of that. I because I wanted her. So the thing is,
yes,
I'm left home to be this adult, right?
Yep.
And now I done got involved in some of the same things that she was doing.
Sure.
And because she was never coming home a lot of the times, right? She would be gone for weeks.
Wow.
And so I wanted her.
Yeah.
And I don't know where the thought came from, but I mean, we can say now that it's because of the devil and he introduced the thought, right?
Sure. Yes.
But that thought entered my mind, the only way that you can have your mother is to do the same things that she did.
Exactly.
So, and that's what brought us together.
Yeah.
So she was a dolphin, right?
Yeah.
Me seeing her, listen, I stuck the needle in my arm myself.
Wow.
You know, I knew how to get her dope. I knew how to get her needles, her spoon, her everything and cook it up. I did everything that I saw her do.
Wow.
And so it had been like a year before she knew that I was even doing drugs. And she happened to come into the dope spot. And there I was sitting in the bathroom shooting dope.
Wow.
And she wanted to kill up everybody, right?
Wow.
But she couldn't. I said, it wasn't them. It wasn't them.
Right.
It was you that, you know, that introduced me to this.
That's right. Yeah.
And so from there, this is when we started together. We started hustling together. You know, we started sticking up and burglarizing and playing checks together. So we both going in and out.
Wow.
You know, so most of the time she would get out, I would stay in, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of the times I was doing 90 days, 6 months, a year. It was so bad that I even asked the judge, please give me some time.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't send me to the penitentiary.
Wow.
I would spend my time over in the county jail, you know, and I have 17 cases that I done been in, locked up 17 times.
Wow.
In the county jail. 6 months, 9 months, you know, 90 days. I mean, 30 days. It was just going on and on and on.
Wow. Being in a system is a system. It's almost like you have bad credit. You on the system for over so many years. How did this, because there is light that we have to talk about. When you had all of these cases and you brought up, so another gentleman that was on our show, his name was Arthur Williams,
mm-hmm.
and he actually went to prison for counterfeit,
mm-hmm.
right? But he spent time, and his time was that he actually was drawn. He was a painter. He found himself. What I felt that you were screaming to the judge was, give me prison time so I can get away from what I'm doing right now so I can find myself. That's what I think the man upstairs was trying to get you, where you automatically just came out to say that. That's what I felt in regards to where you were coming from. But having those cases, you know, and being on that system for quite some time, there was the light that actually hit you where you found the Lord. You found the Savior.
Listen, I'm going to say this story first before that piece, right?
Yes.
Because this incident that happened, I thought that I would have said yes, right?
Right.
When, because I lived as a man for over 17 years and played that life, and the men in the streets wanted to kill me because they thought I was this big time pimp and had all this kind of stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
I had them taking me to the drug spot to get some drugs, right? And I'm sitting in the back seat of the car and I'm nodding. And I hear them say, man, she think that she a man. We going to rape her and kill her and throw her behind Brock's Candy Company.
Wow.
They came to a stop And I knew it was nothing but God, because I was high. When I tell you, I was out of it. The car came to a stop, and I heard what they said and was able to open the back door and jump out and start running. And I end up jumping through a glass window, a two-flat building, receiving 183 stitches. You see my arm where it's cut up?
Yes.
Both my arms cut all the way down, hand cut off, shoulder cut, cut in my head, and I was literally standing in that hallway in a pool of blood.
Wow.
And I saw my life, everything that I was doing. I saw my life flashing before me, and I was begging, Lord, if you spare my life, this time I'll live for you. And I said, boom, and I was out.
Wow.
And I woke up in Loretta Hospital. I heard them calling my mother to say, there's nothing that we can do for her. We're rushing her to the county. And my mother went in labor and couldn't get there. But God had a plan, right?
Yes.
He had some doctors on the scene when I got to Cook County Hospital. They immediately started to stitching me up and reviving me and giving me blood transfusions, right? Because I'm sitting here today to talk about it, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes.
And you would have thought,
yeah,
Rico, that, man, only a fool would continue to go back and do this again, right? And I got up and I went back to start shooting drugs again. But in 1986, you're talking about that light, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 1986, I was sitting in my mother's garage. And I was shooting dope and smoking crack cocaine. And I kept saying, I couldn't get high. I said, I can't keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I can't keep living like this. It's got to be some hope. By this time, my mother had gotten her life together, though. See, she had went and gave her life to the Lord.
All right.
So I had an opportunity to see the difference in her, right?
Yes.
And I said, man, she went over there and they did something for her. Maybe they could do something for me.
That's right.
And one Sunday, July 1986, I stepped in that door, and the light was there waiting.
There you go. Come on. Oh, man. That's what I'm talking about. Being able to see that angel of light, because somebody was guiding you to be able to get there.
Absolutely.
Somebody was protecting you to definitely get there.
Absolutely.
When you step through those doors, what happened
then? When I stepped through the doors, I saw my mother at this time. She was going up and down the aisle praising God, right? And I'm like just amazed. I'm looking at her. I'm like, wow. And on the inside, you was like, that's what I wanted all the time,
yes,
was my mother.
Yes.
To see her as a mother.
Yes.
This is what I wanted all the time. And I mean, she was just looking like, you excited because
this
is what you wanted,
that's right?
Right. And because all my feelings was hid and wrapped up in drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And to see her doing this, I was like, and I'm sitting there and the man of God teaching and preaching, and he come back and he said, he up teaching and he behind his pulpit, right? And I'm sitting there, I'm looking, and he began to say, Denise, you don't have to live like this.
That's right.
You don't have to continue to live like this. I'm sitting, I'm like, yeah, I'm like this. Yeah, whatever. I ain't trying to hear all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead on some way. He just talking. And but my heart, it was softening up my heart. And as he continued to talk, you start getting edgy in your seat. And he told everybody, bow your heads. And he come down out the pulpit, right? And he come down beside me and he went to say, Denise, you can't keep living like this. God sent you here to be saved today.
That's right.
He want to deliver you. And I'm sitting there. Now I'm really feeling. And he said, come on, Denise. Come on, let God do something for you. Tugging at my heart, right? And he reached out his hand. And when he extended his hand, I put my hand in his. And he ushered me up to the altar and called for the sisters, come pray for him.
All right.
And when they came and prayed, I could feel a change, right? But when he stretched out his arms,
mm-hmm,
and I'm saying that to say this because I had a hatred for men. I didn't want to have nothing to do with men, right? And when he stretched out his arms and just brought me into his arms and just held me, right? I felt this light down on the inside. You said a light in the tunnel. That light come up out of me, right? It was like, you free now.
Yeah.
And from 1986 to now, I have not shot drugs.
Amen.
I have not been incarcerated.
All right.
I ain't stuck up. I ain't forged no checks.
There you go.
Listen, I ain't laid with no women. Right. I ain't smoked cigarettes. I ain't drunk alcohol. I haven't done any of those things since 1986.
Come on, man. Come on. Oh, man. Woo! That's what I'm... Hey, if you guys don't know, if you guys ain't saying anything about this, you better say something about this, because hearing that from where you come from to where you go to where someone can actually help save yourself is a big difference. We talk about, you know, sometimes about when you get baptized, when you go into church and you go into you go under the water, then you come back up and you see nothing. It's something fresh. It's something beautiful. And you see this bright light. It's almost like you went to heaven, but your whole body feels like it's cleansed just by that touch and that hug. It's almost as if you got baptized that day. To be able to say, you're with us now. The angels. People that's going to take care of you. But you also found the right way. As soon as when your mom, you saw your mom there the first time. Now you knew you had a connection that you're no longer going back to what you were going back to anymore. So,
absolutely. And I want to say this because yes. It was a struggle, right?
Sure.
Anytime you're making a transition and you got to think about it. I'm transitioning from drugs, yep. Right? I'm transitioning.
That's a big one.
Right. I'm transitioning from living as a man for over 17 years.
Yeah.
And it was a process, right?
Sure.
So I had to go through that whole transformation, yeah. Right? Psychologically.
Yes, of course. Yes.
You know, and to be able to work on this outer part of me. So that whole transition, when you talk about the mental illness, so thinking about all those things certainly brought on. Some suicide,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Wanting to kill myself, all types of things. I was faced with all those things, but only by the mercy of God
yeah.
That I was able to sustain that. I had a support circle that God had put in place for me,
sure.
That I was able to talk about everything that I was going through without feeling guilty, shame.
Yeah.
You know, when I said, listen, I feel like I want to go shoot some dope today.
Mm.
You know, or walking past somebody and I'm seeing their wallet sticking up in their purse, right?
Yeah.
I want to pickpocket them, right?
Yeah.
You know, I want to cut some pockets off because you're going through all this transition. I'm not having a job. I'm not having money, right?
Yeah.
So you want to do that edge is still on, but being sure. Able to pick the phone up and call and say, listen, man, God kept me today. Man, listen, I want you to know God kept me today. I ain't going that woman. Look, I didn't steal her wallet.
Right.
Man, I ain't going to get no woman today. So to be able to call and say those things, yeah. I ain't shot no drugs today.
Yes, yes.
You know, that was huge.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It's an addiction and also what we call breaking the habit, right? What happens is that you see something that you want. It's almost like you go on a diet for some of us, right? Cheeseburgers in my life. And sometimes I know I can't have too many of those. And I have to be able to say, please keep me away from the cheeseburger.
Absolutely.
Right? Right? And you have to be able to have that control. But what happens is that you had a word to be able to tell you no. Because before, you didn't know the difference between right and wrong. You know that.
I mean, you knew that. You knew, but you had no power.
Exactly.
That's the difference. You didn't have no power, and you had something that was stronger.
Yes.
That had a hold on you, right?
Yes.
And I'm talking about when I used to walk past and I'd be shaking.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I know that I want to go ahead on and just tear that pocket off, right?
Man.
So, man, listen, it's huge. And I tell anybody, listen. I'm not going to tell you that my transformation was easy,
mm-mm.
But because God gave me a mind,
yes.
You know, I wanted to do what was right.
Right.
I wanted to get my life together,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And because I wanted to do that, then he supplied that strength to me to be able to do it. He put all the people in the right places to help me to get there.
You had the angels waiting for you at that door when
absolutely.
That door opened up. And I think... I call them angels because the rehabilitation centers are not just, I mean, it's not just for the centers itself, but also for the churches as well, too, when you walk into
absolutely.
That door. And I think also it took therapy
absolutely.
For you as well, too, from a psychological standpoint, to be able to know how to actually say no. Everybody, Denise Jones is in our house. Are you having a good time?
Man, listen, I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying it. Because anytime
it.
I can tell somebody about how to make it and how to survive,
yes.
You know, and all it takes is a simple yes.
Yes.
You know, they tell you, what is that saying that they have? They say, listen, if the streets, I'm going to use the street life. Sure. If the lifestyle don't kill you.
Yep.
You know.
You don't know what to do about that. Come on, man. Hey, so Donna Marie Bird says, you knew, but you didn't have the power. I like that.
Absolutely.
Thank
and that
you.
Was what I was stating.
Yeah,
you know better, yeah. But you don't have no power, no control.
Yes. Thank you, man. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have something coming up, everybody, that this is a nice little flyer because you know why? It's Mother's Day. And what business? I mean, we're talking about mothers. We talk about mothers and how we had the transformation. But the Rico No Suave show is on the road again, everybody. May 13th, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. Mother's Day special. We will be going live from the New Life Community Church. Make sure you guys tune in. We're going to have close to 15 mothers that we're going to be talking to that day in regards to Mother's Day and how we appreciate them from the Rico No Suave show. And we're going to also talk a little bit about, you know, some of the mothers that actually lost their loved ones, but also and how it's being, you know, a good thing as far as for them being mothers and talking about memories. So make sure you guys tune in for that. And also we'll be blasting this again because we want you guys to make sure that you're tuning in. That is a Saturday, everyone. So actually take some time out of your day. If you're going to be on the road, we're going to be broadcasting from everywhere. Yes, the Rico No Suave show.com is where you'll find it. And also you'll see the link tree. También Rico No Suave show. All right, let's get back to Denise because, you know, we only got 15 more minutes of fame, you know. And I love the story. I really do. I really love this story, and it's very powerful. I can't stop looking at you because of the power that you have for others to be able to understand what it's like to be in the streets. And even during that time, and it's still the same concept, drugs and things like that hasn't changed in regards to addiction. But also the way that you've been doing it for quite some time, that's a long time to be able to be in that situation, right? With no barriers to be able to get out of it until you walked into that church, until you knew that someone, that your life was almost over until you jumped out of that window, right?
Right.
And I'm so blessed to actually have you here. I'm so privileged to have you here. We have to talk about your book because that's the reason also of your journey. I will say this though, and I don't know if you're doing it already. You have to have a docuseries for this. You got to make one. Because don't nobody go through that many of years without having a docuseries.
Mm-hmm.
People are always looking for that. Film directors are always looking for something like this to be able to have for TV, right? This is a story that does not, just not for radio, but it's also for TV, for reenactment, for actually making sure that producers and film directors, if you haven't already done so, we have to talk about that.
All right.
Because we definitely need to make sure that just by you having this book, they have the book. Let's make a movie about the book now, right? Because your story is so powerful. I don't think the world just needs to be able to read it, but they also need to be able to
Absolutely.
See it as well, too. What was the name of the church?
The Way of Holiness Mission.
The Way
of Holiness.
Of Holiness
Mission.
Mission. Blessings to that church. Blessings to the who is the pastor?
Elder Donald Mosley.
Elder Donald Mosley, blessings to you. Thank you so much for blessing her. Thank you so much for rehabilitation and everybody that was on that staff that was in that church for actually having you as well as your mom. What is your mom's name?
Annie? Yes.
What's Annie. Up, Annie? Man, blessings to Annie as yes. well, too. Both of you. From coming to what you've been through and actually to where you're at now, this is definitely a success story from Chicago.
Absolutely.
That's for sure, from Chicago. Let's talk about your book. Let me take this off. See it. All right. Who said it could not be done? A diamond from the rough. Now, I said, of course, in my post, you are a diamond in the rough. And I meant that with that. And you said a touching story about overcoming life obstacles and prevailing against the odds. Yeah, the odds were big
Absolutely.
At that time.
Absolutely.
So with this book, tell us in regards to, because your story, right, was everything about your story in this book.
Absolutely. And if you kind of like flip through the book, you see my mug shots in there, my rap sheets in there. I didn't sugarcoat or hide anything, right?
Yes.
And the whole purpose in writing this story is that it might help somebody else,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And that's why I can say that I appreciate God even selecting me to even go through the journey. You know, when you look back, yeah, it was hard, it was rough. How could anybody go through that? But he brought me through it,
yes,
and it was for a reason.
Yes.
So he allowed me to put everything in the book. And certainly, we certainly gonna talk about a movie, right?
That's right. That's, we gotta talk about the movie.
Absolutely.
We gotta do a docuseries on this. This is something that I think will definitely hit really big. Coming from Chicago, because we are one of the top, you know, that everybody talks about. But also talk about success. A lot of people hear about the negativity about Chicago and how they're running in the streets, how they're killing and Chirac and all of that. But we also have good things that actually come out of Chicago.
Absolutely.
As well, too. We do have diamonds, but we also have gems of the world that actually comes out as well. Where can people find... Oh, actually, sorry. You are the owner of Diamond 7 Enterprises and a writer and producer, of course, Diamond from the Rough. Now, with this book, when did you start writing the book?
In 1986.
Wow.
1986. And the purpose was that because I didn't understand what was going on with me. I didn't understand why my life was in the shape that it was. And so during this time when I had given God my life, right, and I had that support circle that was helping me,
yes,
and the different things that they was telling me, I couldn't see it. I couldn't understand it,
sure,
right? And I would go and get in prayer crying, Lord, what are they talking about? What are these people talking about? And when God began to show me,
yes,
the things that had happened to me and what they were telling me, at that moment I wanted to commit suicide.
Wow.
I wanted to change my name because I didn't feel worthy enough. I felt like I'm nothing and a nobody, right?
Yeah.
And I remember standing in my living room and I heard this voice that says, it's not the name,
right,
it's the character. If you change the character, you'll love the name.
Right.
And that's why I come back to start writing as God was giving me things and why I went through what I went through.
Yes.
And that's how I come about this book.
1986?
And it didn't come out until 2010.
Come on.
And the reason, wow, being, okay, I wanted to try to tell a story in my excitement. Ooh, hear my story.
Sure.
And God put the brakes on. He said, listen, I don't want them to see Denise. I don't want them to see DJ. I want them to see the work that I done in your life. So he was cleaning me up, shaving all that stuff off. He said, I want them to see my glory.
Yes. Yes.
I don't want them, when they look up and see, nope, I need them to see me. Because they can't come to Denise for
that's
help,
right,
they got to come to me.
That's right. A diamond from the rough, but you're a diamond in the rough of glory.
Absolutely.
It's that shining brightness that you actually have. I am so happy that you are here. I can't tell you about how many touching stories that we have on this show. But this one right here that I told my audience, it's going to get deep, right? Because I want them to understand that, you know, it's not all about peaches and cream, you know, chocolate chip, Oreo cookies.
Absolutely.
All the time. It's about where you don't have anything to eat and how do you get past that. Now, Rockwell Gardens, the projects.
Absolutely.
That's hard.
Absolutely.
Even Argyle Gardens and other places that was around, that those the Jets was no place that you really want to be around, because there was nothing but crime and there was drugs. But, you know, I'm not saying there wasn't no good people, but that was the lifestyle.
Absolutely.
That was the lifestyle. You talk about Caprina Green as well, too. And, you know, Chicago is made of those communities that actually during that time where there was gangs and there was things that was actually happening, but then there was also some good people that came out of there as well too. And this is definitely
part of the reason why, because I have a non-for-profit organization, which is Tender Touch, and
okay,
which is working with formerly incarcerated women. I go in and out,
yes,
of the prison speaking. And so I'm so happy about this and this opportunity with you as well,
yes,
is one, because you have all these celebrities, right?
Sure.
And nobody wants to hear about these stories. They leave all these these small stories behind, yes. and I want to put my story in the forefront
yeah.
so that we can reach back into communities, like you said, yeah. and show there's still some other diamonds that's in Chicago,
that's right?
right? Because some of those same individuals that are celebrities, they have tell the stories. They done been where I've been, yeah. but they have tell it. But I want to give it up in the raw, right?
Yeah.
And so we putting it out here and putting it together. So that's why I appreciate this opportunity for being on your show and connecting with you, and hopefully yes. that we will take it further.
Yeah, we have to. With something like this,
yes.
you have to. The one thing is that, and I think that's one of the reasons why I want people to know more about your story. And I think because how strong and how deep you are with your lifestyle, where you came from and where you are today, and when you wrote this book in 1986, classic. When I say classic, I mean classic to the fact that this book is made of gold. Never take that away from you. This book is made of gold. 1986, and we're in 2023 right now. And you went and you published this in 2010?
Yes.
This is classic. This is something where people should have on their shelves all the time. Because people need to understand it. And this book can go to other places. Now, let me ask you a question. Is this in a library?
It's in a few libraries, okay. so it's kind of hard to get it throughout the whole Chicago because of the type of book, but the suburb libraries, yes.
Okay, that's good. The reason why I asked that is because I was speaking to another editor as well, too, and she put her books in a library for kids to read, for people to read, for someone to be able to check this out, because you're saving lives with this book. This is not just, hey, I'm going to just read a book and then that's it. No, you're saving people lives. This needs to be in people's homes that's actually going through situations like this.
I agree.
And is this also, where else can they actually find this book?
So it's on Amazon. So it's pretty much, because it's on Amazon, so it's in over, man, how many bookstores, right?
Okay.
If you just go out there and Google it, you can pull it up. Books of a Million, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, everywhere. So they have it. They're able to get it.
That's awesome. I'm telling you, man. I can't say anything else, but I got something for you. I got a shirt for you. And of course, this is just for, you know, this right here. And I want you to look at this camera. Just the reason why. I want you to look at me, but I want you to look at the camera too.
Okay.
But here's why I'm giving this shirt to you. Because you are this diamond. I'm so touched right now because there's a lot of people that's actually running wild right now. There's a lot of people that don't understand what it means to be able to see someone of your caliber coming out of the rough, the tough, the crime, and look at you now. Because you were saved, because you needed to be rehabilitated when you saw that light. Someone had to touch you, that tender touch, in order for you to be able to be where you're at today.
Absolutely.
I think because your mom, Annie, she actually was in that aisle waiting for you to walk through that door. And for you guys to be able to, when you were doing crime together, now you're no longer doing crime together and you're doing nothing but greatness together.
Absolutely.
Between each other. And I think following in the footsteps of your mom really came out to a success story, and also continuing to be without drugs, to be without crime for so many years, and the power that you have within yourself, the effort within yourself, and also with your mom, you both are a blessing to this world. And also you're gonna actually save a lot of people's lives. Everybody needs to have this book as well too. In 1986, this is classic. This is something where people need to really understand that you are a gem of the world. So this is for you. That's right.
Right.
All right. Yes. Okay. Yes. You are definitely a gem of the world.
Yes.
I cannot say I'm lost for words because I'm touched. And it's not like I don't have words to say. It's just that it's not very often that people don't hear stories like this, but it should be often that people need to hear stories like this.
I agree.
Everybody from Hollywood should hear stories like this. People from all over the world need to be able to hear your story. And it doesn't matter as far as when it comes to whatever situation, because every culture have a situation that they need to get out of. And this right here is kind of like mom and daughter coming from where they came from and look at them now. Right. This is definitely a success.
Absolutely. And so, I just want to add this piece because of the whole household being affected. And at the time, it was five children. Right.
Yes.
And so the other children, both of my brothers were big time drug dealers. Right. Yeah. They no longer selling drugs no more. I had a sister that we were very close and she was getting high right behind me, prostituting and doing the whole role. Right.
Wow.
So all three of us, my mom and my sister, myself, we are on the road taking this message of hope, right?
Wow.
And it took the person that introduced us to go back and get it right so that we can help. We can get it right.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
Look, I appreciate this opportunity with
you. This is definitely, like I said, this is definitely going to blow up because of our platform. And you came at the right time, right? You came at the right time because we are affecting a lot of lives out there, right? We're telling people about what we love to do. And this is the passion that we have for what you're doing. We got to tell people how to follow you on social media. So let's get their, let's get her social media up, please. This is the first one. And it is Instagram, author Denise Jones. Make sure you follow her on Instagram, everybody. Make sure you follow her there. On Instagram, follow her now. Please make sure you follow her and then she'll follow you back.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. Here's the next one. All right, Facebook. I'm a friend on Facebook, everybody, so you guys know. I am a friend on Facebook. Author Denise Jones, make sure you go ahead and follow her. It's all about business, everybody. Tell her about her. Tell her that you saw her on my show, but also give her nothing but great, great comments. Positive vibes always. Right. Always, always, always. So make sure you go ahead and follow her and like her on Facebook. Let's go to our last one. Keep it business, everybody. We got LinkedIn. Keep it business. Don't go in spammer. Don't do no spamming. Right. Author Denise Jones on LinkedIn. Make sure you please go ahead and follow her. If you are a film director, if you are, you know, into radio, please make sure you go ahead and follow her there on LinkedIn. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much for being on
You're
my show.
You're so welcome.
Yeah, it was great Absolutely. To have you. It was so Absolutely. Great to have you on the show. I'm choked up for words, baby. Put your hands together. That's Denise Jones, everybody. Thank you so much for being on the show today, okay?
Appreciate
and then
you.
We got to get out of here.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. We got to get out of here, but thank you guys so much for actually being on the show with us today. I am blessed. I am touched, everybody. I'm going to sleep good tonight because I know that somebody actually touched me and made me feel like we can do anything. We keep it going. But we got to do one thing, of course, before we get out of here, is our social media. All right, everybody, we got to put our social media up. So it is the website, www.thericonosuaveshow.com. If you want to be on our show, make sure you go to our website and make sure you hit contact us. Send us a message, and if you want to be on our show as well too, please go ahead. And we have the main phone number is there as well, and the archive of this video will be there as well. All right, everybody, let's go to the next one. Boom! You already know at Rico No Suave Show. Make sure you go ahead and follow us there. Follow us there on Instagram. All right, everybody, here is the next one. You already know Rico No Suave Show. Everybody is where you'll find us because Facebook asked us to come back. And that's what we did. Make sure you go ahead and like everything, follow us there, and love everything that we're doing. All right, here is the next one. All of our YouTubers, we are building our journey. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel on YouTube. So make sure you hit that subscribe button. Subscribe to us now. We're putting up everything from LOL to, you know, other crazy stuff as well, too. Little clips of the show. Make sure you subscribe to the show. Let's go. Last but not least, yeah, mixcloud.com/RicoNoSuave Show, everybody. Please go ahead and follow us there. We are a podcast there after, you know, after the show is over. That way you can drive in your car, you can listen without crashing. All right, everybody, we got to get out of here. But yes, make sure you tune in next week. We have my man coming in, the R&B singer, Kerry James, is coming in from Indiana to be on the show. He's going to play a little bit of a tune, everybody. All right, everybody. We'll see you guys next week as we end off the show. Jazz. lie, dead. Die.